Hello and welcome back to The Layover. I'm sorry to announce that this is the season finale of The Layover because I forget what happened actually. What happened? Ben won?
Yeah.
That's right. That's what I remember.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be interesting if we did the whole podcast staying within the bit that Ben won and we just misrepresent the episode entirely?
Are you gaslighting us?
I love gaslighting.
Gaslighting is so fun and very ethical.
Well, it is a good thing that Ben won, because if he hadn't, then it would mark four consecutive wins for me, which would be too many.
Four consecutive wins.
That'd be crazy.
That's hide and seek, tag, snake, Schengen. Yeah.
Bad scripting.
Wow.
That would be bad scripting.
Although if you count the hide and seek NYC special, I did lose that. So
it's true.
Oh, right. The one that was worth double credit.
Many people are saying it's worth double credit. Many people are saying double credit.
Yeah, many people are saying that. So true. So true. Well, Carlisle was lovely. What a great little visit to Carlisle Station.
Yeah.
We got pies. Adam, not a fan.
Of the pies? No, I did not enjoy the pies.
Oh, you didn't enjoy the pies.
I think that for all of my critiques of England this season, which I'll continue to say are not about the people, but the country, I feel like it's more of an affront to insult their pies. They're very proud of their pies, the meat pies and the sausage rolls.
Sure.
Were the meat pies cold? I know you don't like a cold, bready thing.
They were cold, and this was the problem. I think that if it had been warm, I could have enjoyed it. I really tend to not like food if it is not hot, unless it's a food that really it doesn't matter if it isn't hot, you know? But I think this was a huge issue for me.
One of the hiding spot things that I was considering in Scotland was, like, the town that, like, the reason why I knew that town so well was because in all of my uni years, like, what I did every single weekend was drive up to the Highlands and go whitewater kayaking. And this town was on the way. So we would always stop there for pies on the way back. And it was like the pie spot. And their pies were better. But like, it was like the situation where like, that was like the shop that people went to in that town. And it was always like sold out because they were so into their pies. But it's true that the pies can be a lot better than the station pies we got, which was kind of tragic because it was a very nice like local stall with a very nice lady running the stall. And her pies were not actually that good.
No, it was cool. My expectations got really high because of the vibe of the store.
Yeah.
I was like really pumped up and then they were kind of mid. But I'm not here to denigrate a local business.
But Carlisle, it was hopping with the train spotters.
A lot of train spotters in Carlisle. Well, and also I almost lost the filming phone. Have we talked about this?
Oh, that's an important topic. But yeah, we got there and we're like, we have an hour. We need content. And it was great because it turns out there was content because there were all these crazy trains. And even more, like, as always, we don't really film people who are not actively part of this. But, like, there were, like, probably dozens of train spotters of various types.
Yeah.
And I remember there was one old man who had the fit of the century with, like, knee-high socks, shorts, and, like, I think suspenders and everything with his DSLR, like, had to be in his 80s doing his train spotting. Like, that guy was, like, an OG.
That's the dream.
Well, what was funny was, like, we were also there with our camera, and we kept being, like, everyone must think that we are just also train spotters because we were also filming trains. And it was funny internally being like, no, we're not train spotters. We're doing something that's stranger and hard to explain.
Well, I kind of liked it because it's like always a little bit awkward to be filming in public and I've gotten way more used to it. But it was nice that there was more people. There was a reason.
Yeah, yeah. We had plausible deniability.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, yeah, we're just train spotters. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look, we're not train spotters. We're kind of train spotters.
We spot trains.
I've spotted many trains.
We spot trains and we ride trains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately not the Northern Bell. But yeah, so what happened, as Adam was alluding to, was we got there. We went first, I think, to the W.H. Smith in the station to get water or snacks or something. We check out, and then it's like, okay, let's film some stuff. Let's go over to where those train spotters are. We get over there, and I say, like, okay, Adam, you should film this or something like that. And Adam's like, okay, but you have the camera. And I was like, no, I do not have the camera.
Yeah.
And Adam's face dropped.
Well, and what happened was, is that I then assume I left it on the train we came in on.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Which was bad.
Which would be a disaster.
Which would have been really bad.
Now, I will say, we, this season, had a new thing where we have these Lexar devices where you can back things up to them really easily. Mm-hmm. And I had recently backed up my footage. So it would not have been as disastrous as it could have been in prior seasons. And I think I had gotten everything uploaded the night before. So it would not have been truly catastrophic, but it still would have been quite bad. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, the truth is, like, I mean, this is season 16. Never in 16 seasons had I ever just left a camera sitting somewhere without realizing it. Like,
yeah.
And I think I had sort of in my head, I believed that I was basically incapable of doing this because I'm always so focused on the camera. And I mean, you guys can both attest, every time we get off a train, I make us check that we have both of the cameras.
You do that.
Yep.
Incessantly, in a way that is annoying. And so the realization that I just straight up didn't have it, it like almost broke my brain.
Scary.
And yeah. I just sprinted toward the train that we had come in on.
Well, the train was still there.
It was still there.
Yeah.
And the camera was not on there. And then we realized I had left it at the convenience store. When we were checking out, I think I put it down to, like, put my items at the self-checkout, and I just didn't pick it back up.
Yeah, but very lucky, because it had been probably, by the time we got back, it probably had been, you know, 8 to 10 minutes that it was sitting there.
Yeah, no, I mean, if I had left it on the train, then it would have been gone, and it could have just gotten stolen from the convenience store.
Right. So, like, you know, shout out to the people of Carlisle not taking the free phone.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean, that was... I was so scared.
Yep. It was concerning, but we survived, and we will never lose a phone again. We've learned our lesson.
Well, we've still never lost one.
Well, we've learned lessons recently. We're in South Korea. We learned the lesson of sometimes people mess up their alarms or the alarms don't go off. And therefore, we're now better about, like, exchanging room numbers at hotels so that, you know, if someone doesn't wake up, we know, like, what door to pound on, having learned that lesson. But luckily enough, that situation didn't really have a consequence because we were resetting the round or something. So it was, like, easy enough to delay by 30 minutes or something.
Yeah,
what happened was my alarm didn't go off. This was me again. My alarm didn't go off. And yeah, I think I ended up only being 10 minutes late, maybe. But
it was a little more than that. But it was a situation where it was easy to readjust. And similar thing here where it was like the worst thing that could happen, but the consequences were minimal. So now we're going to be so much better about.
Yeah.
I've certainly been even more focused. I personally am really bad about losing things and leaving things behind, but I know that I'm bad. So I know that I have to actively check, which in some ways makes it better. So yeah. I'm also more focused on, like, actively checking that I have the phone at every moment.
Well, I also started when we were in Taiwan, I was pretty good about backing up to the Lexar device. Well, and also Ben and I developed a system for when you're in pairs that I think is actually sort of goated.
It's a goated
in terms
system.
Of how to use the Lexar devices, which I don't think I've told you about, Sam. But the system is I carry a Lexar device. Ben carries a Lexar device. When it's time to back them up, Ben's phone gets backed up to my device. My phone gets backed up to Ben's device. And what that means is that each of us is traveling with a complete record of everything in our bags, which means that one bag could get completely lost and the other person has everything from both sides.
Well, these are like proper show DIT protocols where you always make sure that you have not only multiple copies, but multiple copies in different places on different people traveling, like, different itineraries home so that if the plane crashes, you still have the show.
Right. You should be sending us on different planes. Think of the risks, Sam. Think of the risks.
Well, what we should do that we have done sometimes is like, because y'all usually travel back together. Sometimes we're smart. Like, after South Korea, I believe, like, I took y'all's Lexar devices. It's we exchanged true. Them.
Yeah, yeah, we did a round robin, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's important that if Adam and I die, that we can still release the season of JLag the Game in order to make Wendover Productions money.
Well, it'd be awesome because I wouldn't even have to pay your salaries and still get all the ad revenue.
Yeah. It would be the most profitable season ever.
It would be, yeah. And I don't know what your wills look like, but anyways, no, we would do the in memorial. Yeah, we should. Maybe a fun off-season episode would be create the jet lag succession plan.
That's a good off-season.
Look, good off-season. Real talk, if I die in the plane crash home, I am fine with you releasing the season.
Oh, yeah. I want you to release the season.
I think why not? I think why not?
And you're fine with us selling tickets to the memorial too, right?
Yeah.
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 We'll do like the combo premiere memorial with exclusive jet lag Ben in memoriam merch.
Well, actually, I've always thought that when I die, my goal really is to like leave a treasure with like clues. And so I feel like that would be the perfect time to set that up for everybody.
That is true. We could also do like little keychains with like a bit of your ashes in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like everyone can get a piece.
I mean, as our employer, you are entitled to our ashes when we die.
That's contractually binding.
That's in our contract.
That's in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Great.
Well, Ben wrote that in there. You didn't even request that, Sam, but Ben added that into his contract before he signed.
No, I wanted you to have him, man. Yeah, I wanted you to have him.
Yeah, no, he sent the red line back. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, Carlisle, lovely. And then we got back on, I think maybe literally the same train.
I do think we literally got on the same physical train. It just sat there for like an hour and then it went back up the same route.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's particularly painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's funny is that at this point, you guys are still relatively chill.
We have so much time.
Like, the reason that we end the last episode on me playing it and not on your reaction is that, like, when you get the first curse of the express route, you guys are, like, annoyed. But it's not like, uh-oh, this is catastrophic. And then you see, when you hit the second one, all of a sudden, the game mode is back on. Like, you guys have been like not really in game mode for a few hours. And then it's like, we're back in game mode.
Well, I think for me, and I imagine for Adam too, it was especially weird because I think with the final round, like we always have talked about the way that like during jet lag, we have tunnel vision where it's like, this is the world. This is my life. This is reality.
Right,
and then as soon as you end, I start to think about like, oh, what is like the work that I have to do? What is my flight? What am I going to do when I get home? You know, what emails do I respond to? So it's like the whole world comes rushing back in. And for me, at least, that happens as soon as I feel like the game is like strategically over. So like I was already in like seasons over, you know, how am I going to, as you mentioned, like I was like rebooking my flight to fly to from Edinburgh. We had done that for Adam and Ben.
Well, we were making our dinner reservation as we discussed.
But so it was like extra weird to be like suddenly, it was like being woken up in the middle of the night and told to run a marathon or something, you know?
Yep. Yep.
But, yep. So, yeah, our second little escapade was to, what was that town called? I'll find it.
Sanquahar.
Sanquahar.
Yeah, I don't think we figured out how to pronounce it.
Sanquahar. I don't know. I don't know what a Q in Scottish sounds like.
Sanquahar.
Yeah.
Sanquhar.
But it was nice. It was very sleepy. Not necessarily a bad way, but there was just not a whole lot going on. Not a whole lot of shops open.
Sanker.
That's how it's pronounced.
Sanker. I looked it up. It said Sanker.
Oh, so we were like miles off.
It was pretty though.
It was pretty. I think it was near some, like Adam needed coffee. Adam was getting sleepy and he decided he needed to lock in. So we were looking for a coffee shop and the only coffee shop we could find was like much more like a tea room, which is kind of like a thing there, which meant that it was more the place that you and the old ladies go to get your afternoon tea and little sandwiches and stuff. And they were like just about to close. And that also meant that they were like very much not set up for takeaway.
Yeah, they were kind of confused by us.
And it was cash only. And they were asking like, oh, so are you going to hike to the whatever? Oh, so you're going to this other thing? But as always, it was like, no, we're not doing that thing that would make a whole lot more sense for why we would be here.
Right.
We can't fully explain why we're here because it would take 15 minutes.
Right. Well, it is always funny. It's like, I feel like any time that you're in kind of a small place and it's clear that you're out of place, you know, most small places have something that is of some interest that if a person, a tourist is there, you assume they're there for it, right? Mm-hmm. It could be any number of things, but it's like, you know, even if you don't see tourists that often, it's like, well, when you see a tourist, it's probably because they're here because of, I mean, it could be anything from there's a nature trail to there's a cliff that people climb at to like a famous movie was shot here and people go check it. You know, it could be anything, right? But people always just assume that we're there for whatever that thing is, which is actually sort of a fun way of learning what that place is known for because they always ask if that's what we're there for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at this point, Ben, how much of a shot did you think you had kind of around this point where, you know, you had seen the consequences of the double express route?
Yeah, I mean, I had done the math, you know, the day before. I knew this whole time that I would need like 2.5 hours in the end game, which to me, I mean, based on the way that the rest of this season has played out, seemed plausible, but certainly not anything close to a guarantee, right? Like, I think I had had an end game. I think my end game in Hebden Bridge might have been close to long enough, especially with time bonuses.
Well, it is true that you probably had, I would guess, the strongest end games of anyone this season.
Yeah.
No, I think Ben is our best end game player. I think that you are the, well, your Milton Keynes end game was pretty good, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what the numbers would prove, but I would guess that Ben would have number one and number two between this and Hebden Bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess in my mind I was thinking like, I mean, ultimately, you know, content-wise, it was kind of perfect because I was like, if I can figure out a really, really good endgame, then I can get it. And if it's not a really, really good endgame, then they'll probably beat me. And so I was pretty focused on just being like, I got to find a really good hiding spot. And I think what's also exciting and so interesting and unique about this episode is like, you guys also recognize this, right? And like, you are trying to develop this strategy to most efficiently ask questions. And what I love about this is like, I think when the mechanics of the game feel more relevant than ever, right? Where it's like, yes, more than in the whole rest of the season, you have to think really, really carefully about, is this question necessary? Mm-hmm. What does this question cost? How long do I have to wait between each question? And so I love that it comes together in this way.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that part of where I think some of the critique of the season and the gameplay has come from has been that no one really had gotten all that close to my first run for most of the episodes, which meant that in general, I think we could just sort of play like, eh, maybe they get a curse, maybe they get a whatever, but like, let's just nail this down, find them as fast as possible, not worry too much about the curses. Let's just, you know, get there. But I do think the game's functionality starts to reveal itself more effectively when it's close, because it does show like, when it is close, when someone is potentially threatening your run, the strategy of just asking a bunch of questions, I think, does start to become much more questionable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what this kind of shows is that, like, for all the experience that we have in long game and mid game, we actually probably have a lot less useful experience in the strategy of the end game because, as you're saying, it's like, it's rare that the end game really matters because, like, the end game, you know, at least in our experience, it can only really go on for so long, even without the best strategy. So usually, in most instances, you know, particularly this season where we had that strong opening run, it's pretty clear that you have enough time that you can play a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
In the end game and not necessarily, you know, focus too much on like what is the 100% most optimal strategy.
Right.
This was different though. In this, we knew going in, we needed to do the best job we could at the end game.
And we get pretty debilitated in that end game. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Between, God, I mean, the Curse of the Impenetrable Fog is brutal.
It's a tough one.
And the veto on the street shape, also brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And the veto on the trace. I remember, I mean, and you see, I have a huge reaction because I'm like, you're telling me he got all of these incredible curse cards and you managed to have a veto in there that you're able to use for this, I'm like, that's insane.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I could have used some more time bonuses in the end.
Yeah. So I guess, Ben, before we get into too much endgame talk, I'm curious for your kind of, you know, knowing that you had to maximize your endgame. We get a little bit, but like, what's the full explanation of why this hiding spot? Like, what was the logic?
Yeah. I mean, I walked around a lot because, I mean, it's a really truncated timeline that you see here where, like, there are, you know, 4 hours that pass with, like, not much filming going on, but it's mostly me, like, looking for hiding spots.
Yeah. And no questions. So, like, you didn't have to do anything but...
But look for hiding spots, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you see, like, I had some sort of notions of places to look. I try out a couple of spots. The one that I ended up choosing, I chose, and I think I explained this in the episode, is that, like, it was a place on the map, and, like, if you are really looking at a map of Dumfries, or, like, the circle in Dumfries, you can see that, like, you had to travel up a single street to get there.
Yeah.
And yeah. So...
You weren't going to stumble on it.
Right. And so the idea was that, like, unless you guys have developed through the questions an incredibly accurate idea of where to go, this is not going to be an area that you are going to come across incidentally and see anything that I've sent photos right. of.
Because this place has rail on one side and a river on the other side. So it's a narrow band that you have to choose to go up.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's just basically one street that shoots straight north, and that's the one that I went up and then over.
Yeah. Which I think proved quite effective.
Definitely,
except,
yeah.
I mean, and you see a lot of, I mean, the end game is pretty fun here in that, like, we keep trying to go up this damn bike path that is the right way, and we keep not being able to.
Oh, yeah. Like, I do wonder how much the audience picks up on that. But, like, I mean, we saw it, like, as soon as we got out of the station, and, you know, I'm pretty sure we both, I mean, I certainly, like, I was just gravitating towards that path. It just, like, right. called out to me.
Right, yeah.
Because it just felt like the kind of thing that would be attractive. Totally. And we agreed, and we kept being like, we got to explore this path. And I think we try to go down it. Like three times?
We roll for it, I think, two or three times and we fail.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think it gets a little muddled because I think we are initially talking about it as a place where we think Ben might be hiding.
Right.
When in fact, it's just that we need to go through that path.
To get to where, yeah.
That's a effective route to get to where he is. But it would have taken us to the right general area. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think part of the attractiveness for us was actually that part of the reason we were interested is with that curse, we knew... Here's a really long path without any intersections. So mm-hmm. it's like a safe way that we can like bolt up to a completely different area of the map and explore it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that that is one of the weaknesses about the place that I chose is just that like in its isolation, it also can like if you've asked enough radars and things like that,
yeah,
it might be easier to pick that apart. You know, as opposed to being somewhere really, really dense. But ultimately, my decision there was that, like, in order to do that, you will have to ask many questions. And then at that point, hopefully, I've drawn, like, enough time bonus or whatever.
Well, it's also worth mentioning, this is, I feel like, a classic layover tidbit that we don't address in the episode at all because I think it's just a little in the weeds. But about a quarter of Ben's potential hiding area is not legal. For him to yep. hide in.
Yep.
It's the area to the west of that river. And the reason is that your hiding zone has to be accessible without you ever exiting the zone. So like you're allowed to leave your hiding zone if you want to film stuff or check things out or whatever, like, because it's no advantage to you, right? Like it actually might be inconvenient to you that you now have to run and take a photo and it's going to take you longer to get there. But, you know, if you like, you can wander a little outside your hiding zone just while you're exploring and stuff. That's, you know, no problem. But in terms of your final hiding spot, not only does it have to be within a half mile of your station, you have to be able to get there from your station without ever going more than a half mile away from your station. Because if that weren't the case, there's a world where you could spam this where, like, you know, imagine a world where there's a river in your zone and there's an area past that river that is within a half mile of the station. But in order to get there, you have to walk a 10-mile loop completely outside and around to get to it, right? We can't let that, you know, that can't be legal. And so it is the case, actually, that there is, I believe, a path onto that island, but by literally, I think,
it was really
a matter
close.
Of 4 meters, Ben cannot go all the way across. The beginning of the bridge is in your zone, but the end of the bridge is not because of its angle. And so by a matter of 4 meters, you can't cross into that area, which meant that that area was all illegal.
Yeah, this was quite annoying to find out. Like, I figured this out pretty early after I got to Dumfries, and I was like, fuck. Because that does hurt a lot, especially if you guys also realize that, which you did.
It was annoying, for sure. But yeah, I will also say, yeah, the fact that we had to deal with the rail splitting things was annoying, too, because it's like, it was not easy to cross from one side to the other side, which I guess is the case in a lot of places, but I feel like here it was especially annoying. There was just less opportunity to cross.
Well, it was particularly annoying with our curse.
With the curse, right.
Oh, yeah, with the curse, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, classic style, we kind of make the wrong judgment call. I mean, we kind of made all the wrong judgment. Like, every instance we had where it was like, do we go this area or do we go that area? We went to the wrong area.
We make the wrong call so many times. Well, what's funny too, one thing that you don't see is like, I mean, you see a bit of pre-strategizing before we get there, but like we had hours. And I remember I was driving myself crazy trying to pre-plan what questions to ask and in what order, like doing, okay, we do radar, then we get a trace, then we get another, you know, like all these things. And then the photo of the path or street getting vetoed totally screwed the whole plan that we had developed. And then it was just like, okay, we are almost into, we kind of, the combination of the curse and then the veto on this, it was like, okay, all of our like 3 hours of pre-planning we did for this endgame out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a completely different note, what I'm remembering is, Ben, you went to the wrong bit of the Marks and Spencers. I'm glad you appreciated it, but what I had been telling you about was really good was their, like, prepared food sections.
Oh.
Because they have a food hall. Most of them, at least, have a food hall. And the food hall has, look, it's still, like, pre-prepared sandwiches and stuff. But I think, in my opinion, I don't think it's controversial to say they're at the top of the tier list of UK prepared foods.
I mean, I don't think this one had that. It was really small. But the breakfast sandwich I had there was good. So.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. Well, Marks and Spencer's, if you need, they're mostly good because they have like mini Marks M&S's in like a lot of train stations and stuff and airports and stuff where you can get there. So it's like, it's mostly good there where you can get like the best prepared sandwiches. I would even rank it above potentially Pret, and that will be controversial.
Whoa.
You know, you can fight me in the comments. We don't really have comments, but personally, I would rank them even higher. Anyways. Back to the app.
Back to the app. So, yeah, I mean, so we get there, and I would say that our first question is a big success because the fact that we get a hit on that radar and that the island that Ben is not allowed to be on is in that area means immediately we're only working with probably about a third of the initial area. So I'm kind of like, hell yeah, like we're crushing it.
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on because as like is kind of our informal policy, like considering it was your game to lose or win, it just meant that like I was certainly giving my opinion, but like strategy was up to you because like I didn't want to be the reason you lost.
Right.
So, you know, you were doing the map on your phone and I had like no idea what was valid or not because we didn't have time to like pause and whatever. So yeah, I was just a passenger princess pretty much for this.
Yeah, it was very stressful. Well, and you can see that I, there's one moment in there where, you know, I'm doing the dice rolling and I'm trying to track things on the map. And I'm like, I'm getting sort of overwhelmed with like all of the different things that are, it's basically like that all of this shit has gotten put on us. We're like, everything's getting vetoed. We have this curse. I'm trying to track this stuff. It's all like very confusing. And it's like, you know, There's a lot going on for sure.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, as you see,
we just slice and dice pretty much.
We slice and dice as best as we can. And then eventually the curse, we have the full hour, it just goes away. So, I mean, you get complete use out of that curse. And I mean, especially the combo of this and no street trace, which I think is also what you did in Hebden Bridge. It's brutal because if you don't have a street trace, you really do have to do some wandering looking for the right thing, right? Like, You can't pinpoint. And when you have this curse, it's so antithetical to a wandering-based strategy that it's just kind of brutal. Like,
yeah.
Yep.
It was really tough.
I mean, I think ultimately, I feel good about my hiding spot. I think that, like, this was probably as long as I could have dragged out the end game in Dumfries.
I think you had a great end game.
Yeah. I can hardly imagine a better hiding spot. I mean, I think the only thing that would have done it would have been, like, more mistakes on our end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really think there was anything more you could do.
Or drawing better cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, better cards. Well, because, you know, one subtle gameplay implication of your whole strategy of the double express route is that you had to set aside for a while 5 slots and then later 4 slots in order to execute on this. And that was all during a period where we weren't going to be asking you additional questions. So like, and you had to discard time bonuses, right? So you had gotten some decent time bonuses that you got rid of. So, I mean, it is worth keeping in mind that like, you were forced to have a hand that was very much not optimized for time bonuses. I mean, you entered the end game with no time bonus in your hand, which is pretty unusual, right? Because of the way that this strategy had to play out. And I do think that that ultimately, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that your pure hiding time was longer than mine. I'm almost certain that that's true.
It could have been.
Because my hiding time, I think, was 10 hours 53. And then I had an hour and a half of time bonus.
You had like an hour and a half.
Especially because I pulled a 30-minute time bonus during the end game. I mean, that one time bonus pull in the end game alone is enough to determine it.
No, I mean, this is one of those things where, like, when the margin of victory is this small in the end, you just think back to all of the different things. Like, there's so many little moves Sam and I could have made during your round that would have made the difference. I mean, even if we had just done the end game 20 minutes faster, you know. I don't think, like, Curse of the Hide-and-Seekception made the difference, but even, like, something that small, a curse that we thought was essentially useless, is, like, sometimes that margin does matter.
It does. No, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you played very well. And I think that you played, I mean, I really do think in terms of the hand that was dealt to you, you played extremely well. Like, you know, you didn't have an easy starting place. I think you picked a solid spot. And then, you know, I think you used the cards extremely well, you know, so.
Yes.
Well, he finally remembered to lock in.
I did. But I just didn't lock in quite enough. And so congratulations to Adam.
Yeah.
Well, and thank you.
The nice thing about it is that I think in the end, the win feels extremely deserved because you guys were really having to work for it there. I mean, you guys were really rushing around in this end game.
Well, I would argue, and I think this is somewhat counterintuitive, I would say the argument for me deserving my win has a lot less to do with what I did as a hider and a lot more to do with what I did as a seeker, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that as a hider, I did anything particularly impressive or whatever, right?
Well, the majority of influence you have in this game is as a seeker. Like, there's really only so much you can do as a hider.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is more a game that you lose than win.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Which I think is counterintuitive. I think that the feeling when you're watching is you're really mostly focused on the hider and what they can do. But the truth is, yes, that I do think that rounds are more determined by the seeker than the hider. And I do think, I mean, as we noted, there was not a single wrong turn, basically, among the seekers past round one, right? I mean, there was some slight inefficiency.
There was inefficiency. I would still characterize round one as inefficiency.
Sure, I suppose that's true.
Because, like, it's not dramatically different from going to Glasgow versus directly to Carlisle, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though, I will point out that, like, again, I think it's fair to characterize that, like, we've maybe gotten too good at this game. But I also think that there is a degree to which there was some luck involved.
Oh, quite a bit, of course.
There were a number of times throughout the season where the Seekers were mostly just making a guess.
Yeah.
Like an educated guess, but a guess, and got it right, like, every time. And I think that we 100% could have seen versions of this season where, like, we were playing technically just as well, but that, like, we ended up making a big mistake.
No doubt. No doubt. No, I mean, as we noted, like, the difference between me winning this season and you winning this season is one time bonus. So, like, I don't think you can really attribute that I'm just much more skilled at the game, right? I think it's, like, things fell in my favor in a few different ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although, things fell in my favor as well in this round. Certainly, I drew some good cards. The thing is, things really just don't fall in Sam's favor ever. And that's the real lesson of Jet Lag the Game.
That is true. I mean, what is brutal, Sam, is I still believe you could have won in Milton Keynes.
I do too.
Especially if you had been able to duplicate Express Route. And I know that, you know, I mean, we've litigated this quite a bit, but while I agree that it would have been possible and perhaps you would have found you with just the satellite of the tallest building, I suspect that knowing how we were approaching it at the time, without the Santander, we would have asked you more questions, might have been enough to get you the time bonus you needed. You very well could have gotten that double.
Perhaps. But I do agree, you know, certainly I would hope that the audience agrees too, that, like, I think you could watch this and feel like it was, like, not that close, but, like, even if the times, like, there's a difference between what the times end up as and what the potential of different rounds were. And, like, there were all these potentials that really could have, you know, in, you know, most extreme form being, you know, this run, but, like, there were plenty of instances where just some very small decisions could have led to a run that, you know, could have beat Adam's run by the lit bit or even by a good bit. They didn't happen. But, like, I think it was closer feeling than it looked on paper to us.
Right.
But, yeah, we do definitely think that any time we do hide and seek again, we got to shake some stuff up.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's the season.
That's the season.
Pretty good.
Yep. I personally enjoyed exploring the UK a lot more. At least for me, despite living in Scotland, I explored Scotland plenty. But in England, I basically had only ever been to, like, London and then, like, brief visits to, like, Manchester and Liverpool and, you know, some other small spots. So, like, I had never been nearly to as many places in England as I did this time. And look, I will admit, there are some real charmers. I like the lesbian village. Mm-hmm. I like the seaside spot. All of the places, none of the places were terrible except for Milton Keynes. But yeah, it was good.
It was nice. It was nice. I liked it there.
Had a lovely time.
You know, I do remember after the cameras wrapped, we had like one last jet laggy moment back in Carlisle because we all went down to Carlisle because it was the most efficient route back up to Edinburgh. But then, like, y'all discovered that.
Oh, yeah, there was a faster way up.
Well, I had decided that, like, I was going to overnight at Edinburgh Airport because I had like a 6 a.m. flight the next day.
Oh, we switched. We stayed in Glasgow. That was what we did.
We did.
Yeah. But then y'all discovered that, like, all the hotels in, like, downtown Edinburgh were, like, sold out. Because I think this was maybe, like, a Saturday night or something, or a Friday night.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it was crazy what was happening with those hotels.
So you decided you were going to overnight in Glasgow instead. And because of that, it was like at the time that you noticed that, there was like a Glasgow train in like 7 minutes or something.
Yep.
But Adam had gone out of the station to try to get a cheeky Nando's.
I was getting a cheeky Nando's, yes.
But it was like this big rush. And I remember like I ran to the Nando's. You were like not picking up your phone or something. So I like ran to the Nando's to try to find you. But I think you had already gone back to the station. I missed you.
I'd already left.
Because we were going on different trains. So like, there was like this big rush, and then I didn't even like see you. It was just like, okay, I'm going to Nando's, and that was the last time I saw Adam.
Yeah.
Just
well, one thing that was really funny that happened during all of this was I was going to the Nando's, and Ben, I think I was maybe there or almost there when Ben called me.
Yep.
I think I maybe was there, and I was like, oh, I need to get back. And so I got it as quickly as possible. And I think it was a funny thing, too, where it was like, I think I didn't have, like, utensils or whatever. But, like, normally I would have checked and, like, asked for, like, oh, can I get ketchup? Can I get some sauce? Can I get? But I didn't do any of that. I just grabbed it and ran to the station. But the funny thing that happened was I believe two jet lag viewers saw me and they went, like, good luck with the game. Because they saw me running to a train station with my backpack on. And normally you would assume that this was for a game reason. And so they saw me and they were like, good luck with the game. And I just said, thank you. Because I didn't have enough time to explain, but it was funny that I was in fact not playing the game at all. I was simply trying to get my cheeky Nando's and get up to Glasgow.
Yep.
Yeah, but we made it.
Well, that was great. I did personally enjoy the opportunity to ride that line to, in my case, Edinburgh one more time, which is gorgeous. Like
beautiful.
The section, especially between Carlisle and Edinburgh, but not be super fixated on the game. So I had time to like look at the view and all that. And then I had a lovely night at Edinburgh Airport and then had a 6 a.m. flight the next morning, which was lovely.
And we had a great time in Glasgow. People are so friendly.
Oh my gosh. We had a great dinner in Glasgow.
Mm. Yeah, great dinner.
Wonderful.
Yeah, Glasgow is very much more, let's say, authentic Scotland than Edinburgh, which is more like Disneyland Scotland.
No, it was crazy. When we got there, I remember being like, oh my God, there's nobody here compared to Edinburgh. Like, the difference was striking.
Yep. Anyways, what else do we have to say?
Thanks for watching the season.
Oh, we got to hype up the next season a little bit. Of course, you'll have stuff before that. We'll have the podcast. Our new season of Abolish Everything is starting to come out soon. You probably saw the teaser for that. Ben and Adam both appear, and some other, you know, jet lag favorites like Amy, of course. And is Matt in this season? He's in this season, right?
He is.
Matt's in the season. Wait, who did you say appears? Amy does not appear.
Amy does not appear? Oh, Amy appears behind camera.
No, she just directs the show this time.
Amy directs.
Okay, well, Amy appears in the live version because she hypes the crowd up, but I guess not in the filmed version. But yeah, Matt Kroll from the Magic the Gathering season we did. It's great. I think probably better than season one. I think we had some really good episodes.
I think there's no doubt that it's better than season one. My other pitch is that if you're a person who checked out like episode one of Abolish Everything and you were like, it's too long and also all these people are yelling, my message to you is that we fixed a lot of the kinks.
We had a yelling intervention with the yeller.
There was an intervention that occurred. It's still passionate, but I think that the vibes and the sound mix are much improved now.
Mm-hmm.
And also the episodes are shorter this season. We tried to edit things more tightly. The sets are a little shorter, so it's a little more bite-sized. And I do think that the show's just better. It's just figured itself out more. We've got a stronger line of performers. So I would say if you did watch Abolish Everything, or if you didn't, just give season two a little try. Give it a little taste, you know? Why not give it a
give
go?
It a taste.
And if you don't like it, then no problem. That's no big deal at all. It's okay. That's fine. But maybe just try it out.
I especially liked Ben's set this season.
Thank you.
As a tease.
Thank you. It was weird.
It was a great one. It was weird. It was definitely weird.
But Ben, I think in episode one, you're on panel, actually.
Yeah, I think that is the one they ended up going for episode one. Yes, I'm on panel, which was really scary to me, but I did it.
And then beyond that, I don't want to hype it too much, but man, I'm looking forward to the Taiwan season.
Yeah.
Good season.
We're working on episode one. It's great to start to see it come together.
It was super cool.
It's a fun one. And I will even say it's one of the ones where I don't think episode one is bad, but like it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier as it goes.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a build.
And Taiwan was incredible. So anyway, we'll be back in 2 weeks for the first off-season episode. We'll be here through the whole off-season. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for watching the season.
Bye.
Goodbye.